Hi everyone, I'm Samir Agarwal and I'm a third year graduate student at Berkeley, and today I'm going to tell you about reoptimizing data parallel computing. This is joint work with Srikant at Microsoft Research, Nico, Ming, and Jingren from Microsoft Bing, and my advisor, Jan Stajka at UC Berkeley AmpLab. So let me give a very brief description of what exactly do I mean by data parallel jobs. Data parallel jobs in modern clusters can be a collection of maps, reduces, joins, or some other framework-dependent operations. These operations are often executed in a particular sequence and operate on potentially huge terabytes of file, ultimately resulting in some output. Specifically, if we look at a particular phase, in this case a MapReduce phase, each of these operations can potentially be made of constituted of multiple tasks, which each run on different portions of the data, can be varying in number, ranging from tens to thousands, and can communicate with other tasks in a specific pattern, or in this case, it's a shuffle. Most of these jobs which run on large data parallel clusters are running on hundreds of thousands of machines, if not more, and they are normally batched in nature. So any reoptimization or any kind of optimization framework that has to be developed looks at two key metrics. One is the job completion time, as to how much time the job takes from start to end. And the second is the cluster utilization, which is how much resources the job end up using in terms of computation power while doing the execution of the job. However, allocating appropriate amounts of resources to different parts of a job is potentially a very hard problem. For example, just let me give you a very simple example. In this case, a job with a large number of work done in map phase and a smaller reduce phase can potentially be sped up if we allocate one more map task to the map phase instead of the reduce phase. And this, in essence, is because of an imbalance for the work done at different stages of the job. And this is due to either the complexity of the computation that is being performed at that stage, or even the amount of data that's being processed at that stage. And theoretically, coming up with this exact measurements of how much computational power or parallelism it needed at each stage is very hard, because in data parallel computing, you can have arbitrary user-defined functions which can potentially constitute code that's written by users and have never been seen or reasoned about standard techniques. The second problem is that of data skews. Let us consider a job that aggregates some values over two partitions, one for each reducer. In this case, incorrectly partitioning this job may actually lead to one reducer having a lot more length as compared to the other. And actually correctly partitioning it or choosing the right number of partitions in this case can actually result the job finish a lot faster. Once again, it's hard to actually come up with the correct partitioning scheme because of an abundance of arbitrary user-defined functions or even non-uniform data, which makes it impossible to reason about the input or the output that every job is reading or producing. And in production clusters, we actually saw that these problems are very, very real. Imbalance, which in this case is, let's say, example, the average task time it takes per stage, we see that if we actually go on and measure this, we see that most stages actually take less than 10 seconds, while the top 4% takes more than 100 seconds. And if the very top 1% takes more than 1,000 seconds to complete. Similarly, if we measure the skew, which is the problem due to incorrect partitioning of the data, the maximum partition size is almost equal to the average partition size for most jobs, but the top 5% of the jobs have maximum partition size almost 10 times than of the average partition size. And while I can go on and on about these specific problems, what I would like to tell you about is not a point solution that can fix these specific problems, but more of a holistic approach that can tackle these kind of problems, which are due to problems in the plan of the job. So to optimize the completion time and cluster utilization, ideally you need to control four things. One is the parallelism that you allot to each and every stage. Second is the partition size, which is how much data is being read at every task or every point of that stage. Third is the operator sequence, or the sequence of operators you want to have these job executed in. And fourth, the very implementation of the operator, which is, for example, a join can be implemented as a pairwise join with respect to a broadcast join, and so on and so forth. And an execution plan of the job lets you control all these knobs very well. Now the question is, who generates these execution plans? Well, frameworks like Hadoop and Dryad allow users to generate these execution plans. However, in practice, we see that this is a very impractical option if your jobs span more than a map and reduce phase, because it's hard to reason about all the things that is happening if your jobs get too long. So we have a very popular set of frameworks such as Hive, Pig, Scope, which take this traditional database approach in which you have a declarative SQL-like syntax augmented with probably user-defined functions that can help you generate these execution plans by converting this declarative syntax into Hadoop and MapReduce or Dryad-like code. And these high-level abstractions frequently mingle with the plan or the four properties of the execution plan that I talk about. And let's see how exactly they modify these properties or the knobs of these plans. So to actually see parallelism or to assign parallelism to each and every operator, Hadoop, Hive, and things like Pig and Scope make it statically configurable, which is that in most cases, the parallelism is a function of the data size you read. So for example, in Hadoop, you can set this to 64 MB, or you can even specify on a per job basis as to how much is the data size you need to read for each and every block. Just for a comparison, the last column contains databases, which is actually, let's say, a state-of-art database that could potentially see these problems. And as far as the database is concerned, the parallelism is a property of the underlying sharding of the store, in which case you cannot actually assign it on a per job basis, but it's rather a property of the entire workload or something that has been set by a database administrator. The second is the data partition. Once again, in Hadoop, the user writes the map and reduce. So the user can actually specify what kind of partitioning he wants from the reducer. In Hive, it is rule-based, based on data sizes. Similarly, in Pig and Scope, it is cost-based. So for example, if a plan gets generated, it tries to analyze the cost of this plan and tries to come up with this appropriate data partitions. And in a database, once again, the state-of-art database actually use cost-based plans. Third, the operator implementation, or the way an operator is physically implemented or executed in a plan. In Hadoop, it's not really applicable because it's the user who writes the map and reduce code. Hive, which actually generates map and reduce code using a declarative language, again uses a rule-based approach by having a data size estimate and trying to see how exactly these operators go. Pig and Scope, again, use a cost-based approach. And the database, the traditional state-of-art database, even uses a cost-based approach. Lastly, there is operator sequence, or for example, if you have multiple operators in your graph, which I showed in the execution plan, in which sequence these operators have to be executed. Normally, these sequences can be very well mingled because most of these operators are logically commutative. So even if you modify the sequence of these operators, the overall semantics of the program does not get changed. Hadoop, since it's written again by the user, it's the user who defines these. Hive and Pig and databases respectively use rule-based, cost-based estimates. However, an interesting point in the database community is that traditional state-of-art databases, or at least the research, has actually said about things that we can measure properties of the underlying data to come up with better estimates. And we are very much motivated by this work. However, in our case, this work is not applicable, or we cannot automatically reason about these abstractions for parallelism data partition directly because of an abundance of user-defined operators in our functions. And this disables us to actually assign costs for each and every operators that may occur in databases. So what we really want from this exercise, and keeping the two problems that I talked about and a large number of problems that we observed, is that we want some automatic control on the four knobs, specifically these four knobs, so that based on some data and computation statistics, maybe we can predict how much data we are operating on, or maybe we can predict how much computation or how much complex a task is, to essentially optimize our programs, and these operations should be robust to user-defined functions. So just to back up a bit, 90% of the jobs in Microsoft Bing, and this is actually something that's common with most production clusters, are actually user-defined functions. And these functions might be doing complex matrix multiplication or some machine learning, or running some machine learning code, or might be doing as simple as filtering that data or putting it in a simple format. But these operations actually make it extremely difficult to reason about the semantics or the time it takes to execute these operations. So as part of this work, we present ROPE, which stands for Reoptimizer of Parallel Executions, that tries to infer the underlying data and computational complexity information from these jobs and tries to apply and mock up with the execution plan of this job. So we try to see by measuring these data and computation properties as to if we can vary the degree of parallelism assigned to every operator, or we can come up with better data partitions over time, or we can even change the implementations of these operators depending on some context we have, or even vary the sequence of how these operators are being executed. Just to show it in a picture, ROPE has two components. When a job comes into the system, it goes through a cost-based optimizer that tries to come up with a potential plan. And when it gets executed, this plan collects some running statistics over these. So for example, they can be data statistics, which are properties of intermediate data that's being produced, how the data looks like, how the data that's outputted looks like, and computational statistics. What are the kind of operations that are being produced on this data? What are the operations, what is the complexity of these operations, and so on and so forth. We measure these properties and store it according to the graph, and then apply it back to future jobs in order to reoptimize them. So specifically, there are three usage scenarios that we are chasing after. Using ROPE, we can actually create better execution plans for recurring jobs, that is, some jobs which are weekly, which are executed monthly, weekly, or daily, and they operate on new data as it comes in. And we observe that most of these data properties actually remain quite stable, which means that data properties or complexity properties from one of these jobs, from previous jobs, can actually be applied to new set of jobs. Second, a user scenario is similar jobs. Most of these jobs operate on similar parts of data, and operate on it for some time, and then diverge and produce some different results. So we can use these subgraphs of these jobs, infer about the code and the data statistics in one subgraph, and apply it to different parts of the subgraph. And finally, future parts of the same job. Data parallel computing has this interesting aspect that there are inherent barriers in this job. And these barriers present interesting opportunities because now we can infer statistics from previous parts of the job, and at a barrier, it presents this opportunity to reoptimize that job for future executions. And once again, while I'll not go into each and every statistics that we, the data properties or code properties that we collect, there are three broad categories of things that we infer or collect for these jobs. First is the input and the output data properties, or in some sense, the cardinality or the number of tuples that is being produced, or the average row length, or the number of distinct values of these tuples, which help us design better partitions, for instance. Heavy hitters. Heavy hitters are defined as those values which occur with a very high frequency. Then there are certain code properties. For example, how many CPU cycles this particular operation is taking, or particular task is taking. What is the peak memory utilization? And this helps us devise better parallelism techniques. And we collect certain leading statistics, such as hash histograms or data samples, that can help us predict future operators' performance better. And just to give a context, the balance example I mentioned, which is essentially deciding on the number of parallelism at each and every stage, could actually be fixed if we knew as to what was the cardinality and the average row length of every operator, and how much CPU cycles or peak memory that operator used. And based on that, assign adequate tasks to that operator. However, efficiently collecting this information is pretty challenging. Let me give you an example of two extreme cases. First, let's say that we measure input properties on this data, and on input data, and propagate over all these operations. So just to show it in a graph, let's say that this is a plan. We collect some statistics on the input underlying files and try to propagate it over in the graph. So since we actually collected the statistics on input files, we get perfect accuracy because we can actually see these files underlying in the cluster. And then as part of, since these are all operators which can be reasoned about, maybe these are written in declarative syntax, group bys or filters, we can reason with some accuracy about the properties that get percolated or propagated up in the graph. However, as you go up and up, the accuracy of these data statistics decrease. And in case of UDFs, these properties are unmeasurable because when a UDF or user-defined function is executed in the cluster, there is no way that you can predict what the output looks like. In this case, there is no chance of optimizing further parts of the graph if you just measure these properties. So the two things that we get with option one is that while it's a very low overhead operation because we just collect properties on input data, it has a pretty bad accuracy. And traditionally in databases, these results have been well validated. For example, there have been papers which say that the estimation error actually increases exponentially with number of operations. And most importantly, the reason that we don't go with this approach is that it makes it extremely hard to reason about user-defined functions, which are something that occurs 90% of the time in production jobs. So another extreme is to store and analyze all intermediate data offline. And what this will give us is that if we actually do that for each and every data that gets transferred between the jobs and store it, one hope is that we can at least use this data to optimize future executions of the job. And again, while it's a very good accuracy strategy, it has an extremely high overhead. For example, typically a data parallel job constitutes of lots and lots of intermediate data spanning terabytes. And using this approach, the job latencies and resource requirements goes up to 10x. And this is something that we cannot afford to have even in 1% of the jobs in a running production cluster. So Rope tries to strike off a trade-off between accuracy and latency and overhead by coming up with a distributed start collector scheme. What we do is, while we do collect statistics on all the intermediate data, we try to collect it on a per task level. We augment or add some code to each and every task that runs as part of data parallel jobs, and then collect each and every statistics in a distributed fashion, and then try to merge logically these statistics so that we can reason about them. And this property is what we call composability. So these individual task collector operators have to be composable, and they have to be really, really light. They cannot afford to have a considerable overhead on the job that is collecting these statistics. So for that, they have to be really single pass, and they cannot keep linear state in memory. So composing these stats is trivial for some of the statistics that I talk about. For example, cardinality is as simple as collecting individual row counts on each and every tasks and then composing them. It is doable for some others, for example, heavy hitters and distinct values, in which you can, with certain accuracy and utilizing certain streaming algorithms, compose these statistics with certain accuracy. And we talk a lot about that in the paper. And it's an open problem for many, many other things. For example, there is no way right now known of composing equi with histograms with sufficient accuracy so that they can actually make an effect on these plans. And before going into the evaluation section, let me briefly describe the related work in this area. Past work has looked into implementing these execution plans well. For example, there has been work done in placing tasks to maximize locality, or dealing with outliers or slow tasks if machine goes bad, and orchestrating network transfers, two of which are actually presented yesterday and today. What Rope tries to do in turn is to find better execution plans. The hope is that once we are able to find better execution plans, these techniques or these improvements will even stack up, producing even low job latencies. Secondly, there has been a lot of work done in databases which we leverage on. For First of all, there has been a seminal paper by Kabra-Devitt which talks about single machine and short queries and how to re-optimize them on the fly. Then there has been work done in creating robust plans given the uncertainty in propagation of these properties up in the graph. And third, there has been some work in parametric query optimization which talks about the fact that you can look at these properties as a range and then try to make the decisions if you vary the range of these properties. And where Rope stands in among all this work is that Rope tries to reason about parallel plans in general, or how to vary, or how to come up with a principled approach to find out the parallelization in a particular operator. And specifically, we are very much concerned with user-defined operators. So any of these schemes which work in context of declarative languages don't hold well with our approaches. And then the question is, does it work? So we evaluated Rope on a large production cluster at Microsoft Bing, and our workload suite consisted of hundreds of production jobs from a wide range of users during March 2012. And thanks to the CAMReady deadline of NSDI, we were actually able to execute these jobs on a real production cluster with a real implementation of Rope running on them. And the baseline here, which I'll be presenting in these results, is production scope, which features a state-of-art cost-based query optimizer that is existent in a parallel database. And the metrics that I'll be looking at is completion time and cluster utilization. So the highlights of the improvements were that we got up to 2x improvements across job latencies for production jobs at 75 percentile while using 1.5x fewer resources. And the reasons for that was we have better execution plans. It resulted in reduction of terabytes of intermediate data and cross-rack shuffles because now we were able to better come up with better operator implementations or better order these operations. And finally, we were able to achieve better parallelism in execution in implementing these operators. And our distributed start collector scheme incurred up to 2 to 5% overhead in this entire framework. So if we look at the job completion time, here the y-axis represents the percentage reduction in job completion time. Once again, I say that the baseline here is a state-of-art query optimizer, a cost-based query optimizer. And the x-axis here is the job size. So we are just binning the job sizes with respect to their binning the jobs with respect to their job sizes to see how various jobs improve. And we see that these improvements are fairly uniform across many of these different size jobs. Large jobs tend to get probably a bit more improvement because there is more things to do with this plan. Similarly, with cluster utilization, we saw that we actually were able to get considerable reductions in cluster resources over time. And just to conclude, Rope improves execution plans for data parallel jobs. Our measurements in a large-scale production cluster identify quite novel problems that have not been seen before, and there are a lot of opportunities that can be built on this. And to leverage, we built Rope, a reoptimizer that learns and uses code and data properties to optimize these plans. And we have been running live Rope on Bing's production cluster since December 2011. Thank you. I'll take questions.
Chandu Tek at Microsoft Research. I'm curious how Rope would work when compared with Dryad Link, which also compiles and makes optimizations on the same platform.
Sure. So I think here the nature of optimization is the key. So both Dryad Link and Scope, which are two different high-level abstraction frameworks, can help us reason about these optimizations based on these properties. So if Dryad Link can leverage these data and code properties, it can also enable us to have many of these optimizations that we see here. So the key point that I want to highlight here is that these optimizations are pretty agnostic to the underlying framework or the overlying query execution layer, but rather it's more of a property of what data and code statistics enable us to reason about parallel plans.
So do I understand right that if I give you a program in Dryad Link and run it baseline without your optimization, mm-hmm. and run it with Rope, you would get the same kind of improvements there as you would get in Scope? Or would the improvements be much less or much more?
So I'm not quite aware of the optimizer that is used in RiotLink. I know about Scope. So for instance, Scope uses a cost-based optimizer, which leverages this data statistics to evaluate a range of plans and come up with the best plan. If there's an equivalent that exists in RiotLink, then yes, all these work can actually be implemented, and the results would be quite similar because of the nature of the jobs.
Thank you. I recommend you take a look at RiotLink and its optimizations.
Sure.
Hello, Matt Ari from Princeton. Is it possible to write the UDFs in such a way as to make gathering statistics and making predictions easier?
Sorry, is the question?
Is there a way to write UDFs or to add annotations to UDFs to make reasoning about performance easier?
Right. Yes, it is. There has been actually some work done in adding notations, or since a user is actually writing these user-defined functions, he knows a lot about these functions, and people have explored into areas such as adding certain notations or adding certain hints to these user-defined functions to know what is going on. And Scope actually has this function in which users could specify these hints in order to optimize these functions. However, in practice, we see that many of these users in production clusters don't really add these hints because they themselves are unaware of what would the data look like at a stage that is like far up in the query graph. So while you can add these so-called hints to the UDOs that are occurring quite early in the query graph, for example, a filter that's right there, but let's say your query has like 10 different stages, and it's hard to reason about what will your data or what will the UDO complexity look like at the 8th or the 9th stage because of the layers.
Hi, Gong Chun from Yahoo Research. Nice work. I just want to make sure that I understand what you do achieve this. I think you mentioned that like dealing with UDFs, doing cost-based query optimizations,
right.
But I don't know, you haven't really talked about how you really achieve that during your talk, so.
I see, so let me clarify, as far as UDOs are concerned, it's impossible to reason about the output data if you just look at the input data. So any traditional database technique or any statistic selection technique that looks at input data fails here. So a high-level nugget of how we reason about UDOs is not to try to predict anything, just measure it. And the way that we do it is by instrumenting all the processes that are running UDOs and seeing what is the type of output data that they produce or what is their complexity. So once a UDO runs into the system, you can collect appropriate statistics about the data, about the task, and find out whether the UDO is too complex to run, or what is the rate, or what are the CPU cycles that this UDO spends on this particular data, and try to reason about this operator cost, and even the nature of data that's produced by those UDOs. So these optimizations can then be fed back into a recurring job, or when the UDO occurs again, so that you can reason more about these
UDOs. So you mentioned types of outputs and complexity, so what are exact those features?
So what are the features of the outputs? Or?
So you mentioned output type and then complexity of computation.
Right.
So what are those exact features you are getting? Like complexity is too general.
I see. So essentially we... collect these kind of information. So
sure.
As far as data is concerned, we collect cardinality, average row length, number of distinct values, or heavy hitters. For complexity, we collect as to how much is the CPU cycles that each task takes and the peak memory utilization for every task. So these help us predict as to what would be an expected complexity, code complexity, or data properties that will be crunched by that UDO.
Okay, so you don't get extract anything about from the code. You just look at the resource utilization.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Ron again from Purdue. So basically, the statistics that you gather, they are dependent on like other jobs that are running in parallel because the data center is
right.
Shared, right? So you would gather the statistics the second, third time you run the job.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that the environment itself has changed, like the traffic on network has changed. So how do you consider these kind of dynamics to make sure that the prediction is correct?
Right. So you are absolutely right in the sense that the code properties, for instance, may change depending on the environment that is there. The data properties generally would remain constant as long as the data, the underlying data does not change, and we measure that. Specifically for code properties, it might happen when a cluster gets more busier, this code properties might change. However, most of these production systems have a slot-based system which actually tell you or which reserve this slots, which is like a specific number of cores or specific amount of memory for each and every task. So we see that individual CPU cycles or peak memory usage does not vary too much across tasks. There can be actually differences if you are considering communication costs, for instance. And these are very flaky statistics, which we don't collect. So there can be wide variations in, for example, how long does it take to shuffle 20 MB of data or like 1 GB of data across the network, depending on the congestion of that system. And these are the statistics we try to avoid. These are some statistics which we keep, which depend on some underlying properties of the data, and we think that these are more stabler than the other ones that we can utilize.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you.